All right, we're on the air. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. This is the Talk About Times. Let's talk, everybody. Broadcasting from Chicago. All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome, welcome everybody. It's cracking a little bit. But thank you very much, as internet. You know, when you have the internet, you know there's always something bound. Anyway, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's about 35 degrees, and I have 601, 602 straight up Chicago time. I hope it's beautiful where you are, but it's a sad day in America. It is a sad day in the world. This is something. I mean, as you probably know, what I'm alluding to is Paris, France. We talked about this yesterday to somewhat of a degree, and I knew that I'd be talking about it again today because more information, more tragedies just trickling out of Paris is just awful. It's a shame. It's pathetic. It's awesome. These cowardly, thuggish terrorists killing innocent people who have done exactly nothing to these cowards. And it's a shame. And the GOP is saying that maybe everybody should have had guns. Trump is saying that if some of these people would have had guns, they might still be alive. And this is the sentiment of the entire Republican Party. You know, this, and the thing about it, when he says this kind of nonsense, there's so many people out there who are clapping and agreeing with him. You know, this is just, It takes the some of the glow off of his Iowa performance when he was berating Ben Carson. Now they're talking about everybody should have had a gun, and that Paris has some of the most strenuous gun laws, and look what happened. These Republicans, they're just crazy, they're sick, they're pathetic, awful. You know, and especially people like Ann Coulter. I don't know why I even mentioned her on this show. And I'm sorry for that. Exit that. Cross that out. I didn't mean to mention her name. I don't want to give her any kind of publicity whatsoever because she's a wing nut. You know, so, but you know what? This gives people like that credence to talk about Obama. Some of these crazy ass people are blaming Obama for this. You know, I mean, how can you do that in your right mind? Okay, let's get right to it. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Be right back in a minute or so. Stay with me. All right. It's saying that this was a well-coordinated, three coordinated teams. This is an act of war. Of course, this is well-coordinated. Even hit the news wires. I was saying it. This is a well-crafted, choreographed. This was well thought out. This was plan far in advance. They figured out the terrorists. They figured out Paris's weak points, and they had a lot of weak points, because if they didn't have weak points, this would have never happened. And just a couple of days before this attack, I mean, everybody was railing how safe they were. how they were prepared for terrorist attacks, and obviously that did not ring true because they were not prepared for this. I'm hearing and seeing and witnessing, and 129 dead. I'm pretty sure you know about this too because it's all over the news. It's breaking news. Anybody in their right mind would have heard about this. If you don't know about the Paris attacks, and your head is in the sand. But there's 129 dead, 352 injured. This is just horrific. Something popped up on my screen. 99 critically injured. 99 critically injured. You know how sometimes you're looking at the computer and all these things start popping up and blocking your view? And that's what's happening to me. All right, ISIS claims credit. Like I said before, this is an act of war. Whether it's ISIS, jihadist, and whoever, whatever Muslim terrorist group this is, it's going to be a bunch of payback. Paris going to join France because they don't want that to happen in their country, and they know how dangerous and scary and frightening this terrorist group can be. If they're not the cause of this and they're taking the blame for it, then they're going to get their asses whipped by the military. ISIS is over. ISIS is done. This is done. This is an act of war. It's going to be almost like a world war, and every country going to get together and they're going after to wipe out this terrorist group. And we do have in this country ingrown terrorists. We have ISIS right here in the United States. They are here. Right time to do their dirt, to kill. They're here. They were recruited over through social networking. Fighters are fighters of all denominations, black, white, Muslim, you name it. Anybody can be recruited as an ISIS fighter. Young people, old people. I mean, they just hate the United States. They hate people. That's a damn shame all these people get killed over there because they are just innocent people. Innocent people being gunned down by thugs. And like I said before, I think this is bad for Muslims because this is going to give Muslims another black eye. This is going to give people a chance to be racist against Muslims because this was initiated overseas. This was thought of overseas. And ingrown terrorism is right here in the United States already. And people are saying, well, we don't want them over here. No, we don't want them over here. But you know what? They are already here. They've already been doctrinated by the terrorist group ISIS from Syria, Iraq, and other Middle Eastern countries. The United States. They hate Americans. They hate the people in Paris. And I've also been hearing that, you know, a few Americans in Paris was also killed. This is really horrible. This is terrible, you know. So this is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show. I have a guest on the show today. Hopefully she'll call in around 6:30. She's author, playwright, screenwriter, and poet, Tawana Lawler. And she's going to be talking about, I think she has a book called My Life, and she's going to Life from Tragedy Tells It All. She's experienced a lot, okay? Suicide, teen pregnancy, sexual assault, abusive relationships, and things, and so on and so forth. Okay, she's pretty expert in family issues, abusive relationships, like I just mentioned, sexual assault, teen pregnancies, and a chronic illness. Okay, so that's Tawana Lawler to be on the George Wilder Jr. Show. At least she was scheduled. At least I booked her, you know, because let's hope she's shows up. And she may be listening. If you're out there listening, Tawana, hey, how you doing? Talk to you soon. All right. All right. We're going to be talking more on elder abuse on the show. And basically, this is Saturday, and it's another day on the show where anything goes. That means you can talk about anything you want. But let's be real. The only thing that's actually they're talking about in the news is this coordinated, very, very successful attempt. I hate to say it, but it was a successful attempt by ISIS. And I'm going to say ISIS because a lot of people in the media, professionals, and all of these kinds of folks are saying ISIS. They're saying ISIS, so I'm going to say ISIS. I should say allegedly ISIS fighters. But these people aren't saying the word. They're not using the word allegedly. They are coming out point blank, straightforward, and saying this is ISIS. And I just said if this is ISIS, it's over. It's over for ISIS. They will soon not exist anymore because the United States is going to go after them hard. Paris, France are going to go after them hard. This entire countries of the world, they going straight after ISIS. Why? Because ISIS is a threat to humanity. ISIS, let me say that again, ISIS is a threat to humanity. A bunch of thug, murdering pigs. ISIS, okay? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. And I don't agree with Donald Trump. I don't think people should have been carrying guns. You know, I just think that Paris should have been a little bit more vigilant at these kinds of things. Because these terrorists, if they want to do something, they're going to do it. No matter how much security you think you've got, no matter how protective you think you are, if they want to hurt you, they are going to hurt you. Apparently, Paris, France was vulnerable. And this was a well-orchestrated, thought-out, and planned event. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will thank you for being here. All righty. All right, I'm off here. Okay, it's on. It's just, all right, a little bit more on this terrorism thing. I guess we're going to be on it for a while. I mean, you got harrowing details of Friday's attacks in Paris came to light on Saturday as survivors of the bombing, shootings, and hostage crisis spoke about their ordeal. I can bet they had a lot to say. And I'm pretty sure the media was poking mics all up in their face to try to be the first one with this. You know, so, all right, at least 129 people were killed and hundreds or more injured when gunmen, some wearing suicide vests, bomb vests, target a sports stadium and a string of cafes and bars that took dozens of hostages at a rock concert. Man, the deadliest attack in France since World War II. Oh, yeah, there's going to be a World War III because the entire world is going to be after this ISIS crap, you know, these thugs. And ISIS, you know, they have been recruiting all over the world, from every country, recruiting. So ISIS is strong. They are strong. This is not a wimp-ass group. And it includes Muslims, Americans, just people from all around the world. You know, but this totally originated in the Middle East. And this is bad for Muslims, peaceful Muslims, law-abiding Muslims. They are going to be targeted. They are going to be ripped. The racism is going to be out of this world. You know, this is some changes. There's a lot of changes are coming. And it's bad. The chaos on Friday began when an explosion rang out during a friendly soccer match between France and Germany at the Stade Stadium for the Paris. It was located on the north side of the city, from what I'm reading here. You know, so it's bad. Authorities later said that three suicide bombers detonated explosive vests outside the stadium. Suicide bombers, killers, leaving at least one person dead. One suicide bomber had tickets to the match. Wow. Caught at the entrance with explosives. That's the thing with these terrorists. When they get caught or cornered, they either shoot themselves, blow themselves up because they don't want to be caught, and that is something that they were told to do. Whenever you feel yourself, you're going to get caught, you're cornered, and kill yourself, shoot yourself, blow yourself up. This is what they do to keep from being caught and to keep from being, you know, interrogated and giving out needed information that the United States and other countries are going to need to go over there and just blow these guys all the way to hell, because this is where they came from, hell. So it's awful. I mean, we're going to be talking about this. People are going to be talking about this attack on Paris. I mean, from weeks, from months, from years, decades, maybe even centuries about this. Because this is history making in itself. And the response is going to get a lot of attention too, because they have to respond to this. This has to be a response to it. Okay, people on Fox News, they all of one mind and one brain. They're saying basically Paris, its citizens should have been armed. That they are all of one brain. They're all on the same page. But reasonable people will know that more gun violence is not going to solve a thing. If let's say if Paris, the citizens of Paris and France were armed, it would have just been more bloodshed, more people killed, the carnage would rise. It would just be a lot more people dead, period. I'm not against guns at all. I'm not against guns. I'm not talking against guns. I'm just saying more guns out on the street is not going to solve anything. It's going to be more carnage, more death, more sorrow. And that kind of thing pleases the Republicans. It pleases them. Now, you got some of these clowns on Fox News, some of these so-called pundits, they're blaming Obama for this. They're trying to say that Obama's letting Syrians, refugees into the country, and we don't know where these people are coming from. They may be ISIS. It could be. It could be. And I kind of agree with that. You don't let a lot of people into your country unless you vet it and know about each and every one of them, because you never know what you're letting into this country. But Obama, I'm pretty sure, is going to be stubborn, because a lot of people are accusing him of letting terrorists come into the country by allowing illegal Mexicans to stay, allowing refugees from other war-torn countries to come into the United States, and you don't know anything about them. You know, maybe there is something there. Maybe there isn't anything there. But from my standpoint, if I was Obama, I would do like some other people have said, close the U.S. borders. Now, for him to keep those borders open is inviting. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they got into, they were in Paris. They came over the border. I mean, if any law-abiding country within the world, I think every country should close its borders to keep these thugs out. And I actually do think hope Obama would think about closing the borders. Just close them because of this. Because this could happen here. It could happen here. But the thing about it, you can close all the borders you want, but if the bad guys are already here, you can probably stop more from coming if you close the borders, and we can nail the ones that are already here. Because they are here. The bad guys are here. There's no doubt about it. They're just waiting for the right time, the right moment, to hit us. I'm talking about to hit the United States, maybe even a lot worse than they've already hit Paris. And I on this show, and it's a very popular show, people do listen, people do archive, people do call in from time to time, and that's fine, that's okay. But I can bet your money on this. Every talk show there is right now is talking about this. Every news outlet is leading off with this. France will never rest until they get these guys. You know, because a lot of these guys have died. And, a lot of these guys, a lot of the bad guys are dead. And each one of these dead bad guys, they are going to be checking backgrounds on these guys, okay? They're going to find out a lot just by checking their backgrounds, you know, and that can happen. And I think even the president of France is saying that this was the work of ISIS. This was the work of ISIS. And this is why I know going to be war against ISIS. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to stop with their terrorism. They've got France. They may be looking at to doing it again in France. They may have plotted some other spot to do their dirty work in France. They may have, you know, it may be the United States next. What are they going to do? How are they going to do it? That's the first thing that should be on Emmanuel's mind and Governor Rauner's mind, is how to protect the citizens of Chicago and the state of Illinois and protect the state and city itself in general. That's what they should be thinking about, and getting a budget for the state of Illinois and getting rid of Mike Madigan and his daughter, because they're ruining Illinois, you know. So, but that's another topic at another moment. Probably I'll talk about that during sometime later on in the show. But right now, we're respecting author, playwright, screenwriter, poet Tiana Lawlor, and she's going to be talking about her book, hopefully, My Life. Okay, it sounds like an autobiography, probably. It's probably, and I just love autobiographies. Because I like reading about other people's lives. I like to read about how somebody made it from nothing to becoming something. Now, that's interesting, you know, because you try to emulate that if you can. you know, because there are so many people who have gone through so many struggles, so much negativity in their lives, and they live or want to write about it, want to write it down, and want to share their experiences. Their experiences of what life can bring. Okay? All right. This is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live Chicago. It is 6:26, at least my time. I hope it is great where you are. Chicago. I'm broadcasting out of Chicago, Illinois. It's a beautiful day. It's nighttime, but it's beautiful. It's wonderful. I'm in my studio, and I'm having a great time, and I'm talking about the Paris, France massacre. I mean, who isn't talking about the Paris, France massacre? You know, this is a shame. And I'm repeating myself. You know, ISIS, they better look out, because Paris is going to be after them, and Paris's allies going to be after them. This is a damn shame. 129 people dead. Oh, man, 100 and something injured, 99 critically injured, and the bad guys have killed themselves, blew themselves up. France will never live this down. I mean, the world will never live this down. And what the Republicans are saying, they should have been armed. They should have had guns. The citizens of France, Paris, should have had guns to protect themselves. More guns means more violence. That's stupid, Donald Trump. But Donald Trump is echoing everything that the Republican Party thinks. Donald Trump is unfit to be president. Did you see this guy very animated when he was in Iowa the other day, lambasting Ben Carson? He was, I mean, that told you right there that this man should not be nowhere near White House, any kind of house. He's a nut. All right, this is George Wilder Jr., the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for podcasting. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for archiving. I do know you're there. Believe me. Believe me. And thank you for everything. Thank you for your good wishes on the show. Thank you for inboxing me on Facebook. And all of that good kind of thing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. All right. Let's move right along. Okay. All right. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hello.
You there?
Yes.
Hello.
Tawana. Hi.
Hey, Tawana. How are you doing? Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay.
Thank you. As if
no
I didn't know who it was. No problem. As if I didn't know who it was. I always... kind of bring people in. And thank you so much for us accepting to be on the show today. All right?
Okay, thank you.
Okay, all right.
For having me.
Huh?
I said for having me on your show.
Okay, all righty. You are an author, playwright, screenwriter, and a poet. Wow, that's a lot. That's quite
and
a bit.
And a gospel songwriter.
Okay,
I
all right.
Put it in. Now. Yeah.
Put it all in there. All right. Okay. And you're going to be talking about some parts of your book, My Life?
Yes.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what we don't already know, and why you think your book is important.
Well, I think the book is going to help a lot of people. I've been on a couple of speaking engagements, and when they hear my story, that's what they come up to me. Like, after I get done, the whole crowd comes running to me and tell me, thank you for sharing, you know, because what I've been through a lot. And, you know, people
yeah,
are shocked.
Yeah.
They're like, you lived through all of that, and I never went crazy. I didn't do drugs, but I did drink a lot of beer. And that was my way.
I
of
did
coping.
Too.
That was helping me, but it wasn't. I thought it was. And I was, you know, smoked like a lot, pack and a half a cigarette. And, you know, to me, it's like the rapes and stuff. So, and, you know, that's what, because I've been through so much, somebody in the audience it's like at least one person say, you know, thank you for coming and sharing your story. And so bless people. It's blessing me that I know that people getting something out of that, because for real, to share all of that, people like, they be saying, you bold. You know, a lot of people like to keep their stuff up on the carpet, but
that's
my story.
Okay, but you know what? What you've gone through, a lot of people have gone through, and a lot of people can kind of relate to that. You know what I'm saying? People can relate to that. And it's nothing like sharing your story because you have experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing about sharing something because nobody can really talk about anything unless they actually gone through it.
Right, right.
You know, so that's why I say thank you for being on the show. And I like doing these kind of shows because, you know, my audience see it and they, you know, realize that because I did pump you up. What I mean when I said that, I did advertise the show. You know, so people who did not know your name before, they know it now.
Okay,
because
thank you.
I pump it up on Facebook, LinkedIn, Google. Oh yeah, you know. And after the show is over, you will get a copy of it where you can put it on your blog, your website or your blog or something, huh?
Okay, great.
Yeah, you can. I always do that because I let people, you know, I will send you a link to it. So you can paste that link into your website or blog where your fans can always listen to it. And you always have this show. No matter years from now, you'll still have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, but that's for real. You sound a skeptic.
I know. No, I'm not.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I'm happy.
Okay. Okay. What kind of family issues have you gone through so far that probably other people have gone through also?
Well, like in my book, it starts. The title of it is In the Beginning. And the reason for that is when I was 12 years old, my father committed suicide. And I'm the only girl, and out of four, I have three younger brothers. That devastated us because our dad was in the house. He wasn't an absentee dad. He was in the house, but my mom ended up leaving him. And I guess it kind of saddened him. And he committed suicide. So that kind of like devastated me because, you know, I was his only girl, his only daughter. So it was a different relationship. And, go ahead.
I was going to say that has to leave a mark on you or something, like a wound or something, that you're losing your father at such an early age. And okay. No, go ahead.
Okay, you go ahead. But when I was saying, I felt like that was unfair for him to do that. And I was kind of angry for, you know, some years until I got older. And I think that's why I made a whole lot of the wrong decisions in life.
You know, I kind of see your point because when I was growing up, I didn't have a father either. I always wished I had one because my friends had fathers.
Mm-hmm.
I had a father, but he just wasn't there. Okay.
Right.
And I mean, you grow up with wounds and you grow up with you never outlive that, maybe. That's what I'm saying, maybe. You never outlive that.
That's true.
And you never outlived it because you like you say, you're kind of disappointed. Okay, you also, I'm assuming you also talk about abusive relationships?
Yes. The first relationship I was in, I wasn't even thinking about dating, but I was kind of like being like not paying attention to. I didn't feel like I was loved in the house by my mom because she had a boyfriend. Boyfriend, and I just didn't feel loved, and he was not my daddy. So, and he tried to take his place, and he could not take his place. So, I became defiant. And I was really mad at her, and I didn't want to live in her house. So I was trying to think of ways to get out, and I was dating this guy, and I didn't want to have sex. But after I kept, it was some reason why I got mad that she did. Now, she don't understand how a 14-year-old, things you make them do, it sticks with them. And because I was a virgin, and if she would have talked to me like I talked to my daughters, I wouldn't have got pregnant. But she had my aunt take me to get on birth control pills, and I was a virgin, and it hurt. And plus, didn't nobody talk to me, tell me where we were going, and I was hurt because I was like, she should have took me because she's my mother, and we just didn't have a relationship.
Yeah, I can imagine, and I can probably speak to some of the same things in my own life. I didn't have a relationship with my dad or my mother or my sisters, and I still don't. And because you need support when you're going through that kind of thing,
right.
And I don't think I've got that. So, but abusive relationships. Was there any sort of domestic violence?
Well, when I left when I was 15 because I got pregnant on purpose, and I knew she would let me leave because it was like looks to her. So, let her make her look bad, her 15-year-old daughter pregnant. So she allowed me to move in with my boyfriend, my daughter's father. And he was okay, like, for about a year. But then his mother talked us into getting married. And so when I was 16, so she came and talked to my mom, and my mom signed the papers. And I was kind of like, why? Because I didn't want to be married. But, it's kind of like I was forced into it because I was still a child, and I didn't want to be married to the man. And he was okay until after we got married. And he hit me in my eye, said I was looking at his brother. Was not looking at his brother. His brother was not even attractive to me. I was not looking at him. So I don't know what was wrong with him. But after that, he apologized, and I ended up getting pregnant with my second daughter. He was okay till after I had my daughter. He started fighting me again, and he started locking me in the house, like carrying the phone to work with him. This is like 20 years, 30 years ago. So they didn't have cell phones, the little regular phones. He took them off the wall.
Yeah.
And would take them, wrap them up, and take, it was two, one downstairs and one upstairs. And he would take them so I wouldn't be able to use the phone. That's how paranoid he was. And he would just fight me all the time. And he was just real jealous. He made me drop out of school. He was very jealous. He felt like a man was always looking at me. And if he seen a man looking at me, he'll hit me. He'll smack me out in public and tell me don't look and to look straight. I had to look straight, and I couldn't look at the wind and sight see or anything. And I didn't have nobody to talk to. Like, I didn't have nobody in my family to go to and say, this is what's going on in this household. So I dealt with it for like 3 years. And then he kicked me down. Well, he pushed me down the stairs. And my two daughters were sitting on the couch, and I was at the bottom of the stairs trying to get up, and he ran down and started kicking me with steel-toed boots on. And my daughters were crying, and after that, the next day, he was going to work. I found a way I had to get out of there, and I packed my stuff, and I left. And I never looked back. I never, ever looked back in his direction anyway.
And good for you, because domestic violence, and I'm an advocate for an advocate against domestic violence because it happens so much, it happens all the time, and I've seen it too. I've seen it. It has been in my family. I've seen guys strike people in my family, and I was at that point. I was too young to try to do anything about it.
Right. Right.
But As the older I got, I've seen it a lot more. So domestic violence is just As mm-hmm. we speak, domestic violence is happening to someone. Like I said, I'm an advocate for it, and sometimes I wonder, why do women stay in relationships like this? I mean, why? Because there's so many resources out there for women who are battered like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
mm-hmm.
say you stayed in it for 3 years. I can say, why did you stay that long? You know, because if you don't do something about domestic violence, but some guy beating on you all the time or misusing you or making up excuses just so they can hit on you, you know, it's going to keep happening.
Mm-hmm. It's going to keep happening, yes.
Yeah, it's
going to
keep happening.
And it gets worse.
Yeah, it gets worse. It doesn't get better. Mm-hmm. It gets worse. Because mm-hmm. in some cases, it can get so worse where the guy can actually kill you.
Yeah,
because there's so many times I've hear about domestic and police restraints. What do they call it? Restraining order? That does nothing. That does nothing to stop the guy from bothering you. That just, you know, he just makes him want to do a little bit more. But I can understand why women give excuses to stay with someone who is abusive. I just don't get it. They give all kind of excuses. I have nowhere else to go. Well, he's
right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that would have been my answer. Because I didn't have anywhere to go, and I didn't know about the shelters and all of that. I didn't know anything. I was still a child, really. You know, I didn't get to live my childhood, like my teen years. I didn't get to live that, so I didn't know anything about that. And then the thing about it is, because I was used to that, it was like what I was drawn in. That was the kind of men that I was drawn in, because the second guy knew that my ex-husband was beating me, and he started doing it. And that didn't last for 3 years. That's about a year.
I don't know.
And everything. I was like, oh, I can't deal with this. No.
I don't know what is it about a man who wants to pick on a woman. I just don't know. I mean, personally, myself, I have never hit a woman. I have known women who would try to provoke me into hitting them, but I have never hit a woman. Some women do provoke you into hitting them. I have to say this. But I never done it. I don't understand why some men would do that. It has to be because the woman is so giving, she's so loving. Another thing I think some guys want to be macho and pick on someone smaller than they are. I don't know. It makes them feel good. Maybe they don't have a job or something. Maybe, I don't know, no money, or they're pissed off, or I don't know. And then a lot of guys are beat up on women because they want control.
Right. That's my ex-husband. That's how he was. He wanted control. He wanted to control me. He was telling me, if you leave me, I'm going to kill you and the kids. He was telling me all kind of stuff to keep me in that house. But he was locking me in the house anyway. So I was too afraid to come out of the house, and I couldn't, because he would have stuff rigged up. This is how crazy this man was, like the blinds. He would have them rigged up so I couldn't look out the window. And it looked like one was
shame.
It's crazy.
Oh,
He was crazy. I'm telling you, he was crazy. And then when I finally left him, we ended up still talking, not to get back together, because of my daughters. I was letting my daughters go spend with him and his family, because I wasn't going to do that and take my daughters away from him. And I had a third daughter, and so I asked them, could they keep my daughters for 2 days? But the second day, they didn't bring them back. So I lived in the projects. I walked like a block in the snow to a pay phone to call to ask them when they're going to bring my daughters back, because I miss my little girl. So I'm like, when y'all going to bring them back? And then my ex-sister-in-law called me up and said, you ain't never see those kids again. And I tell you, when I tell people that, I cry sometimes, because I'm like, they don't nobody, because I'm a mother. Uh-huh. I was young, but I love my kids. And that's when I was good to my kids. They never got abused. we didn't have what we wanted, but we had each other. And
yeah,
I was devastated. Yeah. And they would not let me talk. I kept calling and calling. I said, well, I'm going to call the police. He said, I don't care. Call the police. They ain't going to do anything. So I called the police. They couldn't do anything because I was still married to a fool. And then the policeman, he liked me. Not like, you know, my personality. And he was like, and he didn't like what they was doing to me because they end up, he told me to take them to court. He said, take them to court and divorce him. He gave me a court, a number, and he said, divorce him and get a custody of your, get your children back. And so that's what I did. And I ended up, did that by myself too. I didn't have nobody supporting me, going to court with me. I did it by myself. And I ended up getting my kids back. Permanent.
Yeah.
He didn't have visitation. He didn't have no rights or anything. He never paid child support anyway. He never took care of them. I did it by myself, and it wasn't easy, but I did.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. A lot of things I do by myself, and I don't have support either. I don't have, and everything you do, you do it on your own. And if you're successful at it, and if you're successful at doing everything yourself, here they come.
Yeah.
The ones who wouldn't support you, here they come, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I did that by myself, and I was like, okay, nobody's going to come and go to court with me. I didn't know what I was doing, and I was 19, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I went, and I didn't. They gave me my kids back because they gave us joint custody. And on the joint custody, they sent them back to daycare, and the hair would be a mess. They would have on dirty clothes. So CPS was looking at that. So on my visitation, they go, they'd be looking clean, hair would be combed. So the courts looked at all of that. They see them people didn't even want them kids. They was, it was retaliation because I left him. Like I was going to stay in and keep getting beat. And then
Tawana.
My daughter,
everything's okay now? You all right now?
This happened. This happened. I'm 400 now. This happened when I was like in my 20s.
What I'm saying, what you talking about could be easily happening today, now. You know, that's how current it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, because domestic.
But no, I haven't been band heading hit me since then, since teenage years. After I got older, I put up my duke. You hit me, I'm hitting you back. I pick up a skillet, but my little brother said, pick up this iron skillet if he come to you again. And I did it. And the second guy I was with, and he never hit me again.
But see, but you learned a lot. You learned a lot about guys.
Mm-hmm.
You learned a lot about domestic violence because you've gone through it, and you know not to do that again. If you're gonna go out and get a guy, you're gonna make sure that you know that this guy is not gonna be an abusive person down the line.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I've been that way, and I ended up messing with this one little knucklehead after I became celibate. And for like 2.5 years, he done psyched me up, tricked me, and told me he wanted to marry me. We talked for like a year. It was long distance. And he was telling me, called me Love. That was the name, pet name. So we ended up sleeping together. He was like, I'm going to move to Atlanta, and I don't know when I'm going to see you and all that. So I went ahead and gave in, but I didn't. Because I was celibate, and I had been celibate for almost 3 years, so I was getting used to being celibate. So I was like, if he get me started, I might go be wanting it all the time, but I did, and I didn't even enjoy it. But I ended up having to get custody of my grandkids, and that's another chapter. And I got cursed out by my daughter and those kids, paternal people, every single day. I was living in Louisville, Kentucky. I prayed, and I heard move to California. I didn't know anybody in California, but I had five grandchildren. I had custody of them, little kids now. We got on a plane with her, and one of my daughters and her daughter went with us. We just came back to Louisville, Kentucky. We've only been back for like a little over a year. But before we left, I was getting cursed out every day, threatening and life threatening and everything. Man, my daughter, but we got a good relationship now. She apologized and stuff. But, you know, I didn't talk to her for a long time. And then they didn't think I was going to move to California. But I wanted to get away. And, you know, but before
to
I
better
left.
Better yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did too. Good things happened. But I'm going to tell you what, I got to tell you what the news I got. But this guy, the minister, he's got quotes around his name. He's like so called minister. So he told all this stuff, and I'm believing him, but I really didn't feel a connection with him, but he was just really nice to me, and I just wasn't
you
used
must
to
be
that.
Good
I mean,
looking. All these guys, you must be good looking.
They think so. They do. They think so. Yeah, sometimes I can drive them crazy. But anyway, like 10 years later, and I remain celibate. I'm still celibate now. You know, that one time with him, I don't even count that as nothing because it was nothing. But I've been celibate all this time, like 16 years. But because I'm not thinking about a man right now, so I'm trying to get myself together. But I started getting sick. And like 10 years later,
Tawana.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Tawana.
Yes.
Do you have an excerpt of your book that you...
Hello?
Yeah. Do you have an excerpt of your book?
Yes. Well, I got the book sitting right here in front of me.
Yeah, okay. Just read a little bit of it. Just a little bit.
Okay, let me grab my glasses.
Okay.
Okay, let me see.
This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to read, because this book is thicker than I thought. I'm just going to read from just a little bit out of this first chapter. It was December 18th, 1974, after Lee Lawler Sr. committed suicide. The event was part of the most horrible point in my life. You may be wondering who this man she speaks about could be. This man meant a lot to me, yet this soft-spoken man was my dad. I was only 12 years old, my oldest brother 11. There was one under him and who was 10 and the youngest 9. Words could not explain how this affected us. Our dad's demons followed us for many years, but I have been the main target, and I truly believe that I'm the principal target. I have been through a life of hell for most of my life after his death. I never could comprehend what would depress him so much that he would do that to his children, to his family, and friends. Nonetheless, later I was considering doing the same. I'm going to stop right there.
Are you stopping right there?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I was considering committing suicide, too. I was considering. I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah. Okay, and your name of your book is My Life.
Yes, My Life.
It's kind of like
Tragedy to Destiny.
My Life, okay. It's an autobiography. It's about your life.
Yes.
Yes. Growing up from a child to an adult to where you are now.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's 99% of it said. But I put a little, crack some little jokes in the book, though. People be tripping off me.
Yeah, to try to lighten it up a little bit, huh?
Yes. Because people just said, I've read your book and I'm crying. I was like, I didn't mean to make you cry.
But you know what? Even if it's sad, even if it's sad, it's your life. That's your life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people like to read stuff that's sad. Because if it's sad, then that means that they're on your side. You know.
Yeah. And, you know, when I go speak, the whole room tears.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What
if,
talk a little bit real quickly about teen pregnancy.
Yeah, well, by the time I was 19, I had 3 children. And that was not easy. That was really hard. And I really struggled. I did. And I was a teenager and I was too young to be having children. But I go back to saying again, I had nobody. See, now they have programs that where you can go mm-hmm. and they have more things now. And they have people to talk to the teenagers, such as myself.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I do.
Yeah.
I talk to people and share my uh-huh. story. And, you know, mm-hmm. I just happen to be, the only issue I had was with my third daughter, and she has five children. My other uh-huh. three daughters only have one child each, and they all got college degrees. So it's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And even the one with the five children, she graduated from cosmetology school. So all of them, they get, I don't have to take care of them. They're grown women, and they take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I raise them to be grown women. But, you know, a lot uh-huh. of people have kids young. They get on drugs. The kids have seven drugs. My daughters don't do that. They don't do that because mm-hmm. I don't do it. They mm-hmm. don't do it. And, I didn't start smoking cigarettes and drinking beer until I was like 21 or 22, and it was because I was raped. And that's why I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my daughter seen me drunk and stuff, but they never, ever drunk a beer or anything because they was like, we don't want to be like mama.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't.
All right. Okay. You said something earlier about a chronic illness.
Yes.
Mm.
That's why I was saying about 10 years later,
uh-huh.
I started getting sick.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
I went to a doctor. They said they thought it was like a bladder kidney disease because they seen something wrong with the blood. So then they seen it wasn't that. So then I ended up moving from L.A. County to Northern California. And when I went to that doctor, because I kept having symptoms like for them 10 years, but they would go away. Like my knees would swell. So they were symptoms you wouldn't think was related to a chronic illness. So my fingers would swell and I would have, I'd get a rash on my foot and it would go away. My stomach, one time I had a real bad stomach pain and they thought I had gallstones, but it ended up going away. But the one day I went to that doctor, she said, it sounds like you got HIV. And I said, I don't have HIV. I've been celibate for 10 years. And she said, it doesn't matter. And she said, can I test you? She asked me, can she test me? And I'm still like, yeah, you can test me. I know I don't have that. And next week she came back and she said, you tested positive for HIV. I was devastated.
Wow.
I was devastated. I felt like my world was over because I had been celibate. I'm not lying about that. My daughters know. I wasn't dating. I just wanted to live my life. I was taking care of those kids, and I wanted better for my grandkids. So I was going to have my door was going to have be a revolving door with men coming in and out because I didn't do that with my daughters either. But my
mm-hmm.
grandkids ain't never seen me smoke a cigarette. They ain't never seen a beer in my hand because I stopped all of that in 1999. I didn't do all that. That's why I became celibate. So could you imagine once I changed my life and then that happened, I was like, oh, my God, I could have kept on doing what I was doing because I got saved. And that's why I changed my life. And I was like, oh, I got mad at God. I was like, why? I may as well be dead. And I was just really, and I wouldn't go to the doctor. I was just really, really sad. And I didn't go to the doctor for 3 years. And I had to see.
And all of this is in your book. You chronologize this
yes.
all in your book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it sounds like a great book. It's a wonderful book. And if you're out there, you're listening, if you're archiving the show, listening later, make sure you check out Tijuana Lawler, her book, My Life. It's explosive as far as I'm concerned. And Tijuana, tell people where they can go and find your book and order it, download it.
They can go on my website. That's the best way to go on my website because they have to get the second edition. It's the reason why I don't get that first edition because the money don't come to me. It goes to somebody who doesn't even work with me anymore. I fired him. So I did a second edition. So the second edition is better, has more stuff in it, and it's cheaper. because he was charging people like $20, $18 or something, and I'm charging $11.50. But right now, it's 99 cents for the download. So they can go to www.mylifeautobiography.com. Hello?
Yeah?
Oh, it's on my phone.
Is it on Amazon?
Yep.
Oh, that's your phone. Is it on Amazon?
Yeah. If they go to my site, it'll take them straight to and click on the book. It's a picture of the book, and they can click on that.
I think I got a picture of the book right here. It's a young lady on it.
Yeah.
A young African-American. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looking up.
Yeah.
You know what? At first, I thought that was you.
Everybody.
But that's a book cover.
They said it looked like me. Everybody say that. And that's they had second edition on it, right?
It says Tawana Lawson. I don't see second edition. It might be, but my printer isn't working right. It could have been, So, is there anything else you want to add before I let you go, Tawana? You've been a great guest.
Well, thank you. You've been a great host. I would just love for them to read the book so they can see what I've been through and how strong I am, because I'm going to say real quick that after I didn't go for them 3 years, the HIV turned into AIDS, full-blown AIDS, and my numbers were really bad, and they said I had two weeks to live. In those 2 weeks, I got better. I got better. I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. My daughter, they had to take care of me, give me a bath. My hair still coming out. I was dying. But I came back, and I came back strong. So that's what I wanted to say. And that's what people got to do.
Okay.
I didn't lay down.
Okay. You've been on the show a long time, and that's great. You used the time well. I mean, I was enthralled at what you're talking about, and I hope to have you back on the show at some point, sometime in the future. But right now, I want people to think about your book, your life, and go check this book out. It is on Amazon and your website and all that kind of thing. And Tawana, thank you, and I wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you. And what
you're going to be doing. And this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you so much for being on the show, okay? And I will get this show to you, okay, in a link.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was author. All right, that was author, playwright, screenwriter, poet. I should have asked her about screenwriting, because Tawana Lawlor. She was great. That was a powerful story from a woman who has appeared to have survived domestic violence, being diagnosed with HIV. And so on and so forth, and her book, My Life. I'm going to check it out. I want you guys to check it out, okay? All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be with me. Stay with me. Stay with me. Stay with me. Thank you, Tawana Lawlor. Okay. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I would like to thank my very special guest. Go pick up her book, My Life, Tawana Lawlor, author, playwright, screenwriter, and just an all-around good, great person. Apparently, she is a survivor. I guess we all are survivors here, and I'm hoping to have her back on the show in the near future because she's such a great... I love wonderful guests. I love talking to wonderful people who have gone through so much in their lives and decided that they want to write a book. They want to chronologize everything that's happened into their life. I've got my own problems. I've written about my own life. I also have an autobiography. Some people call it a memoir. But, you know, check out, I mean, also check out Tawana Lawlor, My Life, and also check out my material, Echoes of My Sins and Other Things That I've Written on Amazon.com, www.amazon.com/author/G Wilder will take you straight to my page. Or just, you know me, just put my name up there and just check that stuff out. I'm going to have some new material posted, published in January. So you guys look out for that. Look out for that. But apparently Tawana Lawlor, her book, My Life, is available right now at this minute. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Is 7:08. I think it's about 20. It feels like it's about 20 degrees outside. It feels really cold, but I'm thinking it's around maybe 38, 39 or something like that. That's not bad for the ending of fall. Boy, you just really hate to see winter. Some people say, well, some people like winter. Some people enjoy the cold. I was one who never really got used to the cold weather. And then people say, why do you live in Chicago? Why have you been in Chicago for so long then, George? I don't know. Maybe that won't be. Who knows? But anyway, this is George Wilder Jr. And this is Saturday night. And if you're listening, thank you for listening. If you're not listening, then I want you to archive the show, download it, and listen at any time to this show and to other past and previous shows on this network, WTTTY, the Wilder Network, or whatever. And check this stuff out. It's good. Everything I talk about is interesting. You know, I know some people are not going to, you know, agree with everything I say, but if you agree with everything I say, in a show. This is what this show is about, debate, debate, and also this show is about helping each other, helping one another. And I've said this a million times on this show, if we can't help each other, why are we here on earth? We're put here on this earth not just to help ourselves, but to reach out and help those who cannot help themselves through no fault of their own. All right, George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me right here on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Google, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. If you're looking for me, there's no reason why you can't find me. Sometimes I think I'm too easy to find. But it's fun. It's all fun. It is great. It is fun. All right, let's move right along. Of course, we're going to talk a little bit more about this horrific, monumental tragedy in Paris, France. Paris, 129 dead, 352 injured, 99 critically injured. ISIS, the terrorist group ISIS, takes the blame. If they want to take the blame, if ISIS want to take the blame for this horrific incident that happened yesterday in Paris, France, then let them own it. Let them own it. They want to own it, then they own it. Okay, concert hall assailants evoked Syria and Iraq. Okay, so this probably is ISIS because some of these guys, terrorist guys, they were mentioning Syria and Iraq. France needs to know. they are going to mobilize. They're going to go get these guys. But they have to realize something. There may be more ISIS sympathizers in that country. They may have not gotten them all. This just may be the tip of the iceberg. How does France make sure that that nation and Paris, that city, has no ISIS sympathizers around after this aftermath? There's no way. My thinking is France is not, Paris is not out of the woods. There may be still, I'm pretty sure a lot of those smart people over there probably thought of this, there may be still some ISIS people, some ISIS thugs, terrorists in the country that has not been caught. Maybe they weren't even a part of this group. Maybe they're going to be a part of the next group that hits Paris. That's something to think about. So when they say that they're going to hit Paris again, it's a possibility. It's a possibility. And like I've said before about the United States, this is just beginning for the United States. We've probably got a lot of ISIS sympathizers here, I'm pretty sure. A lot of girls, guys, black, white, blue, yellow, joining ISIS, a Muslim terrorist group from Iraq and Syria, those Middle East, Eastern countries. We are not out of the woods. You would think we're getting better at fighting terrorism. ISIS just proved that we are not. France thought it was getting better at fighting terrorism. ISIS proved it is not. What do we do now? What does home on guard, on guard, on guard, on guard? Anything can happen at any time to anybody, anywhere. Never ever think that you've got ISIS contained. Never ever think you've got these terrorist groups contained, especially when they're recruiting people over in your own country and these people are joining in droves. From America, from Germany, from France, from Mexico. The Republicans may have an argument here with me that I think Obama probably should close the borders. That's probably how ISIS gotten into France, open borders. Obama should probably close the borders in the United States. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people probably egging him on to do that, probably Republicans. The Democrats are probably going to say, let the borders stay open. Let them all come over. Let them all come in. He should close those borders. I don't hate Obama. I'm not a full-fledged supporter of him. I don't think he's the worst president out there. But after this horrific attack in Paris, you have to say to yourself, Obama, you have to do something about closing those borders. You just cannot just let people walk over here. And then, you know, you can't do that anymore. The world is a dangerous place. It's dangerous. There's nowhere you can go and be safe. If you go to the store and come back and you make it back safe, you're lucky. We have to keep ourselves safe. Who knows? Maybe if France had to close its borders a little earlier, this might have not happened. But countries are trying to be friendly to those who are fleeing war-torn countries. Leaders are trying to be understanding, inviting these people in. And all of a sudden, they find out that you're actually inviting ISIS into your country. You don't know. You don't know. You can't vet. You got 300,000 fleeing refugees wants to be in the United States. You cannot vet or check every one of those people's backgrounds. They may not have a background. They may have never had a job in there. They may not have a Social Security number because they're coming from a country that probably doesn't have much of a democracy. You're just taking a chance on them. But you can't do that. You cannot do that. So even this radio host, I'm saying to Obama, shut the borders because of this. As far as I'm concerned, the borders should have been locked down a long time ago. The bad element out. Obama does not know who's going to go berserk and kill up a lot of Americans. He doesn't know that. Even if you vet some of these people, they might be the greatest people, the nicest people, but all of a sudden they snap. And that's another 50 people dead within the United States. And we got leaders in this country. We've got leaders. They should use their damn heads. With this ISIS thing in Paris, that should be an alert for all countries with open borders to try to weed out the bad guys within their own countries. Instead of just, you know, having people stroll in from other countries without even vetting them. Take care of them. They're going to kill everybody in sight. You can't trust people. You can't trust any situation. And maybe that's where I'm agreeing with the Republicans, although I would never vote for one of them because I don't think any one of them is fit for office. Is fit for office. Donald Trump is going around saying themselves, which is nutty. That's what Fox News is saying. That's a mantra of the entire Republican Party. I mean, he's going to say anything. He's going to be a wild ass. He's going to be a buffoon. He's going to be a blowhard. He's going to because he thinks that's going to get him votes. That's going to get him votes. It might, because the extreme is out there. The extreme is out there, and Donald Trump is totally extreme, but he's extreme in a kind of a nutty way, you know. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Once again, I want to thank my guest, author, playwright, screenwriter, and poet. Wow, she's got a lot of adjectives before her name, and that's good. That's great. That shows you that she is a very, very talented woman, and she wrote a book. Basically, I'm just going to read the two first words. It's a lot longer than this, but it's my life. And she's right. It's her life. She's gone through a lot. And I just love having people like that on the show to share what they've gone through and that they've made it along the way, despite all the oppositions from family and friends, that they made it on their own and they did it themselves. Isn't that great? That's beautiful. All right, we're going to take a break right here. And let's see if we got this. We got it? All right. Thank you.
satisfaction. And please hear us. Hear us when we cry.
All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting straight up out of Chicago. It's been fun. It's been wonderful. I will be back here tomorrow. I've had a great time on the show, and I hope you've had a great time on the show. Make sure you download and podcast the show for your convenience, because, hey, this is Saturday, and nobody wants to sit around and listen to it. But this is Saturday. If you got your iPhone or whatever you listen to me on, that's beautiful. iPad, laptop, you know, your whatever, your phone, whatever device you might be having, listen to the show. It's a great show. It's a wonderful show. And if you heard Tawana Lawler, you know that I try to get the best people for the show. And she was great. She was wonderful. I mean, she's gone through a lot. You could tell by the sound in her voice that she's been through a lot. But it seems like she's recovering because she's written a book. And, this author is going to that author. And we're going to pick up My Life, the book that she just got through talking about. And you go. About off the air here to see what we can do. We're going to talk more about this bombing. It's just phenomenal because, like I said before, crazy. But I do hope that Obama come to his senses and shut them borders. Now, if this incident in Paris did not happen, I wouldn't be even thinking about the borders, you know. I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, this refugee problem and the immigrant problem, the Mexican problem, is Obama's problem. You know, I mean, I wouldn't even be talking about this. I wouldn't even be addressing this. But after this massive, monumental attack, history-making attack on Paris, something's got to be done. I hope Obama's not out of office until 2017, completely out, 2017. So he has a long time to think about closing the border, but not that long because ISIS is here. They're here. The border has been open a long time, so more than likely ISIS is already here. But he can probably shut the borders to keep him from any more entering. Okay, what happened in France? I just got a feeling it's going to happen in the United States. I mean, because we got knucklehead Republicans. You know, we got the knucklehead Republicans, and they are going to do and say knuckleheaded things. And their knuckleheaded base is going to agree with them. Okay, I've just heard I have 90 seconds left. But all I can do right now is pray. All we can do right now is pray for those people over there who are critically wounded, critically hurt, and pray for those of the families of those who have fallen under the guns and bombs of these thugs and terrorists. And they're not only over there, they're in our neighborhoods. These gangbangers, they're the same thing. They're thugs and terrorists also. So we have to be vigilant on that, okay? All right, this is the George Wilder Jr. Show signing off until next time, and I hope you join me, and I hope you enjoy the show. Drop me a line. Drop me some feedback on the show. Tell me if you like it, you don't like it. Tell me what can be done, if anything. All right, see you. All right. Goodbye, everybody. Okay, can we do this?